All right, comedian Tom Papa is back in Chicago. He'll be on stage at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet next Friday, April 26th. His most recent book is We're All in This Together, and Tom Papa joins us in studio.
Thanks for having me.
You know, in a world of political correctness, truth-telling can be complicated, but only if you give a crap about it.
Yeah, that's true. Or if you work for somebody.
That's true, too.
If you work for somebody, you could lose a gig.
That's true.
But but if you're in the comedy world, if you're just having a conversation with your audience, it's pure. Everyone knows the source.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the difference between a joke and something that's not. And it seems to be an infestation of a lot of people outside of comedy writing about comedy.
Yeah.
And that that doesn't bode well.
Does it change, like, just because of all the political correctness that there is out there? Has it changed what you do?
Because I'm not in contract with somebody, you know,
like,
I don't have a show on like some network or something.
Right.
But it does. It is in the back of your mind. You do. It's ever present because you know so many people that that run into trouble.
Well, I heard you say that in seventh grade, you were a fan of Steve Martin and George Carlin and their comedy albums, and that's when you realized being funny could actually be a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was funny from the beginning. Like, I was making people laugh in kindergarten.
Yeah.
Like, I was just,
it's a good feeling.
I was
to hear that laughter.
Yeah, I just didn't even
kindergarten.
I didn't know it was anything. I remember dancing around with a banana in kindergarten and getting some laughs.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And but it wasn't until seventh grade that summer when I realized, oh, this is actually a career. Like, there's people that continue doing this and as grown-ups.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I knew.
You know, and I remember listening to those, you know, my dad's comedy albums, because they were my dad's, or certainly weren't mine, but the George Carlin's, the Bill Cosby's, really, at the time.
Yeah.
The Smothers Brothers.
Great.
Which I remember talking to Dick, and I said, you know, I had volume two. I cannot find volume one. He's like, dude, that's the joke. There's no volume one. You know, I've been looking for it for 10 years. I can't find it.
Amazing.
Your third book just came out. So it's true that we all learn from one another, but I feel this book is teaching you about really just being a human being.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it started with why are we all at each other's throats, or why is that the perception in the country? And I wasn't seeing that when I was going around touring. I would just see people trying to get along, and we are all in this together. But then it did become a little bit more of a guidebook for just being a human.
Yeah.
I mean, we always think we're the first one going through all of these troubles. And
always.
And you're not.
No.
You know? And you can learn from the smart people that came before us and the dumb ones.
Yeah, almost makes you feel like you're not alone.
Yeah.
In any of this journey.
No,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's really what I want the takeaway from the whole book to be, or from even from my stand-up, is that you're not alone.
Yeah.
You're not.
Yeah.
Walk through CVS and look at all the stuff just waiting to help people, and you run in there and you're like, oh my God, I've never had this rash on my elbow. Millions of people have.
Yes.
And in aisle two, there's something that will help you.
Yeah, exactly. Which leads me to, like, I was looking through the book, of course, and Some Things Can Kill Us really caught my attention. It was a favorite for me. And you write, despite all the advancements we've made in medicine, safety helmets, and bubble wrap, there are still a lot of things out there that can still get you.
As safe as we kind of feel, and you build up these worlds, there's a lot of stuff out there. Manholes.
I know you're right. Pirates, gluten, lawn darts. You mean, you're right.
Yeah.
All in its own category.
I was telling that to my daughter. I said she had never heard of nuclear war before, and she was all freaked out. And I was like, thanks for that, TikTok. And I said, it's okay. I said, that could happen, but you could die so many ways.
Yeah.
I know this was probably bad parenting, but I said,
how old's your daughter?
She's 17.
Okay.
And I said, any way you can think of dying, I bet there's a YouTube video showing it happening. Everything.
Absolutely.
A manatee attack. I'm sure someone has been an embarrassing death being eaten by a manatee.
Well, it's funny when my kids come to me and say the same thing. They'll be like, can you believe that? Yeah, no, that happened 20 years ago and 30 years ago. And when I was a kid too, you're just not new. But okay, you go through your thing though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. It always feels like the end of times, but it's not really. It's just the potential end of your time.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, Tom Papa is back in Chicago. He'll be on stage at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet next Friday, April 26th. And there's more with Tom next on 720 WGN.
Comedian Tom Papa is in studio. His new book is We're All In This Together. Life's observations is what drives each chapter here. And there's one that actually came up more recently for me, but sleeping together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You sleep with another human?
Well, occasionally.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It is, especially the older you get. Yeah. I mean, I'm on the road by myself, and the odds of me getting a good night's sleep are 50-50 that I'll get a good night's sleep by myself. So now you put another person the same age in your bed with you.
Yeah.
The chances of you both getting a good night's sleep on the same night?
Yeah.
Oh, forget it.
Well, it's like, you know, this cuddling is great, but I also need to sleep. So it's okay that there could be some separation.
Yeah, and it goes both ways. I literally had this moment with the cuddling. I was like, you know, we don't cuddle enough like right before we go to sleep. And I came over and spooned my wife, and I could just feel her body going, please get off me. I love you, but you're hot and you're big, right. And I just want to sleep. I have to get up tomorrow.
Well, heat's a factor too. Clearly.
Oh my God. Heat.
My kids are sleeping next to me. I'm like, oh my God. Like, open the windows, turn on the fan.
And then in the middle of the night, we have this very stealth black lab who tries to sneak into the bed, who weighs like 75 pounds.
Oh, nice.
And then you wake up and that thing's on top of you also.
Yeah.
Forget it. And my wife took a little, she had a little problem with, in my last special, I talked all about her sleeping problems, her mouth guard and that stuff. And she really did not like that I didn't talk about my failings, but I've yet to see them.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Ducking your family, even though you love them. And this chapter is called The Lesson of Mark Twain's Cigars. You know, talk a little bit about
that. Yeah. I went to, in Elmira, New York, you can go to on the campus of that university, you can go see Mark Twain's little writing cabin. It's like this little octagon. There's a name for these buildings. It's kind of like a closed-in gazebo.
Okay.
And that's where he wrote. And his family built that. His sister-in-law actually had it built and put on the property for him. And in the museum, they said that he smoked 32 cigars a day.
I saw that.
And I was like, wait a minute, that's impossible. What do you mean? There's no way. He would have been dead before Huck Finn was even started.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, this is how brilliant he is. He wasn't smoking them, but I guarantee you he was lighting them.
Yeah.
And he was, because as a writer, you have to be alone.
Yeah.
And he was filled with all these people. So if you light your cigars and you get to be alone,
you're clearing a room.
I was like, man, I thought he was a genius for all those books.
Yeah.
But it's really, this is a stroke of genius.
Speaking of ducking your family, I heard you talking about in-laws coming to visit and they stayed for like 2 weeks. Like, that's just.
Yeah.
Too long.
No, that's that's not a visit. That's an insurrection.
Yeah. How long is too long when you do those?
Yeah,
things?
My parents are literally on my way to my house right now.
Oh, are they?
And and my mother says that he picks the date. My father picks the date and then goes before and after it until he finds flights that are cheap enough, and then he buys the ticket.
So it's not about you.
No, and they don't even ask. He just shows up. And it's hard because they say, you don't have to entertain us. We just want to be around. We just want to be with you. That's not true. I sneak into the kitchen at like 4 a.m, get one cup of coffee by myself. They're sitting at the counter.
Oh, my God.
They've been there all night.
Waiting for
like,
you.
Yeah, like two lonely sea lions just waiting for me. Oh.
I love that. I love that. Well, you know, and your kids are kind of ducking you too. Aren't they going to college?
Yeah. Yeah. One's already a junior and one's on her way out.
So house, dog, car was all for them.
All for them. I was saying that to my daughter. I said, wait a minute. I didn't want to live in this house. I didn't want to live in this town. I didn't want these. I don't even have my own friends. All my friends are your friends' parents.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go?
Yeah.
I should go.
What kind of deal is this?
Give me a backpack with a Van Halen CD and some weed, and I'll go back to living the life I was living before I met you.
Hello. Yeah, what happens after that? Because I've got one that just graduated college, one going back into college, or going to college, and I still have a 10-year-old. But at one point, you get your life back, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, I've heard that math And it sounds kind of appealing, like they go and then you have this 10-year-old around. So now you have a little more perspective.
Yes.
And you can, but they're also still just as annoying and they're going to go through all that stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
And you're still going to.
But you've done it already.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have a feeling when the first one went, I was really sad. And the idea of my second one going, I was equally sad. But now I'm starting to think this might be nice. Like at 7 o'clock after I've had a martini, to know that I'm not going to get a phone call asking to be picked up somewhere and drive someone, this might be nice. Now, if my wife is not equally as happy with the scenario, it won't be great.
No.
But
no.
For me right now, I think this might be okay. And that's kind of what the book is about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about it like it's me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the only one going through it.
Yeah, yes.
Just follow the rules.
That's right.
Everyone else has done it before you.
Yeah.
Ask people. See what they're done. See how they got through it. It's all been done and all in the schedule.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of your wife, she gets a chapter in this book, too, called Will You Go Out With Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that essay kind of just fell out of me. It was, I was watching my nephew, like on social media, trying to find a girl, just trying to find somebody. I thought, this is wrong. We should really hold on again to the rules, the way that people dated and the time they took, that you met someone and then you didn't get to kiss at first, and then you got to see them again, and then you got to hold hands, and then you got to be involved with them, and then you got to meet their family, and all of these things that some people see as archaic or old fashioned
builds anticipation.
They work.
It's just, they worked.
They work, and they build respect, and they build love and romance, and all of it. And I say, you know, this is going to be your love story. That's one thing people don't realize. Like, once you get married. And people, you're going to tell this story of how you met to your children and your grandchildren. And so make it a good one.
Yeah.
Don't make it, oh, I found her on an app.
Or on any social media that you find out everything about that person in 5 minutes. So where's the excitement and your own exploration of this individual?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a cool way to open the door and like meet someone. Like, so I don't have to go into a bar. I get to see this person.
Yeah.
But once you make that contact, slow it down. And just go through the paces and let it just build.
Yeah,
like I said, these people have been here before us.
That's true,
and it's worked for them.
Well, I love that chapter.
Thank you.
It was great.
Thank you.
Before I let you go, I want to talk to you. You know, you've done Letterman, Leno, Colbert, Conan, like those late night talk shows for comedians. Even the ones that preceded it, they could make or break a comedian's career. I mean, those shows are still important out there, aren't they?
They're impactful. Like And I'm running around doing press for this book.
Yeah.
And I was going to be on Colbert.
Sure.
And that would have been great because he's got a really cool audience and all of that. It's exciting just doing it.
Yeah.
But if the people don't put you on those shows, young comics, they don't need them. They can make their own videos in the club.
Yeah.
Have their friend film it.
Yeah.
Put it up on YouTube. Put it on TikTok. Put it all these places. And I know a lot of people. A couple guys who are opening for me who are selling out theaters now.
Wow.
Because they have funny stuff and the audience responded. And so there's no gatekeeper any longer, which is kind of great.
So Carson was the social media of the time.
It was.
Really?
Yeah. We all were. I mean, millions and millions every night.
And you're doing radio, an author, TV host, actor isn't enough. But you got the new podcast, Breaking Bread, right?
Breaking Bread podcast, yeah. I'm a big sourdough bread baker, and I've been doing it for years, well before the pandemic, by the way.
Okay.
All these Johnny-come-latelys.
Yeah, yeah.
I really got into it. It was a really fun hobby, and I just love cooking for people and baking And I realized it's a great conversation starter when I ask you, like, what was your favorite meal when you were 10?
Yeah.
Oh, I made this. I love mac and cheese, and my grandmother would make it, and it just opens up the conversation.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be more of a podcast. So we've had all these great people, like all these great comedians and food people, and it's really a lot of fun to do. But I pictured it that we would sit and actually break bread, and I would feed you your favorite thing.
Yeah.
But people get so angry when you're chewing on mic.
Oh, that's true. Well, that's true. A little distracting.
They get so angry. Yeah. So we have to hold off on the food part.
It's true. Somebody told me a long time ago when I first started this, you know, it's radio. Don't eat on the air. Nobody wants to hear that.
I disagree. I feel
really?
Like I feel like some people don't. It doesn't bother them. Okay. We all hear people. But
this is good.
But the people that it bothers, it's like an ASMR thing.
Okay.
It really bothers them.
Okay.
So you can't do it.
All right, well, Tom Papa will be at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet next Friday, April 26th. And for tickets, go to Ticketmaster.com. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks so much. This is great. What a great gig you have here.
And a cool view.
Oh, my God.
For radio.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
This is a part of Chicago I've never seen
Hello.
Before.
Hello, one, two. Yeah. You said you were here mostly in the winter.
Amazing.
It?
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. All right, news is next here on 720 WGN.